Now it's time for the Southern Cross with Kendall Hutt.
Yes, now I have Kendall Hutt from AUT's Pacific Media Centre joining me in studio. How are you going today, Kendall?
Good, thank you.
That's wonderful. So, big story at the moment that you guys are working on is about how New Zealand Catholic missionary Douglas Tennant was deported from Papua New Guinea. Can you tell me about this? Why was he deported?
So Kiwi missionary Douglas Tennant, he has been working for the Archdiocese of Rabaul for the past 3 years, since June 2014, 3 or 4 years. And he was asked by the Archbishop to get involved in the renegotiation of a special agricultural business lease in the province of West Pomeo. The Catholic Church at the moment is trying to give back to the local people their own land that the Catholic Church holds, but Doug Tennant was asked by the Archbishop to give legal advice to these locals in West Pomeo over this business lease, because a Malaysian multinational company called Bumiputera Hijau has an oil palm project there. So I think in a way it is a very politicised situation. Mm. He accidentally has sort of landed in hot water, and it's a shame that Douglas Tennant has bore the brunt of this and he has been deported despite a court order staying his deportation. So he shouldn't have even been deported from Papua New Guinea in the first place.
Oh,
because
really?
The proper legal measurements or process has not been undertaken.
Right, so it was issued by the government and then the court overruled that decision.
Oh,
wow. And he got
an order for his arrest and an order for his deportation on the Friday on June 9, and by June 12, the Monday, he was back in New Zealand,
where
he is currently in Hamilton at the moment.
Mm. That kind of also, I mean, I suppose reflects some difference in operation or opinion between the court in Papua New Guinea and the government. Are they a little bit, is there a bit of tension there in both of the, how those two operate?
Yes, I believe so. And the Archbishop, Francesco Panfilo, has also reflected himself that this decision has sort of, by the Ministry of Immigration, has pitted the Catholic Church against the Papua New Guinean government. And obviously this has all occurred in the midst of Papua New Guinea's 2017 general election. Mm. So there have been calls by the Archbishop for the Papua New Guinean government to rethink its decision, and there's also the word corruption sort of being bandied about, and it has called into question the entire role and purpose of a religious worker as well.
Absolutely. And so is the Catholic Church in Papua New Guinea, does it have quite a significant presence?
Probably not the best person to ask about that, but yes, religion does have a significant role and place in the Pacific in general. And when you have a organisation as big as the Catholic Church, it's global, and you have a government sort of getting involved regarding land, sensitive landowner issues, that's allegedly what he's been deported over, it sort of does beg the question of, you know, was this justified if the, you know, if the court has had to be involved in this.
Mm. And so what now for him? Like, what is he doing now?
Doug Tennant right now is in Hamilton. The Catholic Church, they have kindly taken him in. Obviously, his life is in Papua New Guinea. He's left a lot of work unfinished. He really wants to get back there to finish that. He is the administrator for the Archdiocese, and he's just anxiously awaiting a decision from the Immigration Department in Papua New Guinea, and he is considering taking court action against the Immigration Department and also I think the government itself because of this court order regarding the fact that he shouldn't have been deported, at least not 2 days after you've had your order for deportation.
Absolutely. And so have we heard anything from the Papua New Guinea government about this as well? Have they made any sort of comment about it?
They're very reluctant to comment on this issue. They've only commented insofar as to say why he was deported, and this is allegedly due to involvement in sensitive landowner issues. No clarification as to what these sensitive land issues may be, but it is suspected this may be due to this special agricultural business lease being renegotiated, you know, it really should be a fair and equitable exchange of land. The local people should be getting a fair deal out of this. And when you have massive multinational companies involved, it really, really doesn't seem very good for the local people. And that's why the Archbishop and the Catholic Church have tried to step in to sort of make this as fair and equitable process as possible. It is their land at the end of the day.
So it obviously appears that the multinational company is pressuring the government to do this. Have we seen instances of this relationship between this corporation and the government before? Is this the sort of thing that is an ongoing problem?
I think it's more of an ongoing problem. Doug Tennant, in his exclusive interview, filmed interview with us at the Pacific Media Centre a few weeks ago, did say that landowner issues are a sort of a developing problem for Papua New Guinea. The church itself is trying to give back land that it holds to the local people, and that's in the East New Britain province. But this situation in West Pomeo has popped up because you have own families arguing over, you know, who owns the land, who deserves the land, who the land should be leased to, whether or not that's a multinational, you know, Malaysian company that wants to have a palm oil project there, or whether it's the locals themselves. You know, that at the end of the day, that is up to the local people to decide. And he was only there to offer legal advice at the bequest of the Archbishop. So,
yeah, I suppose this doesn't instill a lot of faith or trust in the Papua New Guinea public going into the election if their government is being pressured to cave to the demands of a multinational company.
And the elections polling has ended. That ended on Sunday.
Yeah.
So they're counting the votes at the moment. And I spoke to our Wontok students today, and already there's a little bit of controversy because the finance minister currently, he's the first person from the reigning government to be declared that, yes, he has that seat with a majority of 30,000 votes, and a issue in the Papua New Guinea government elections has been that there haven't been enough ballot papers for people. Very big shortages, you know, a voting population of 4,000 to 5,000 people, they get 1,100 ballot papers. So there's a sort of, there might be a little bit of issue, I think, in the counting. And there have been calls for the election to be redone already. So it's all wrapped up in a very sort of tumultuous but important time for Papua New Guinea at the moment.
And so is it looking like the incumbent government is going to be staying on so far?
Unsure, very unsure at this stage. We cannot
too
say indefinitely. Yeah, it's too early to call. They are still counting. They've only declared one seat. So we are keeping track of election coverage. That's what we have been doing. We have a few we have a few commentators on the ground, and they always send us stuff. We have Gary Jufa and also Keith Jackson, and they work with the Pacific Media Centre. So we do run those opinion pieces, and we do have that on the ground information.
And so why would there be not enough ballot papers?
That's the question. I think everyone has been asking that over this sort of past election period.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, supplies. A lot of areas in Papua New Guinea are quite remote, so it is getting the ballot papers out to those areas as well. But, you know, we had issues, and there were issues in the capital with ballot papers and everything being called off. So,
and I suppose there could be, with that, could there be issues of a certain skew of the Papua New Guinea public getting a higher portion of those ballot papers than others? Like, I don't know, perhaps the more privileged or wealthy citizens that might have more power to be able to get their hands on these papers, or ones who are more urban based than those that you mentioned, it's harder to get it out to rural members of the community. So that doesn't do well for a democratic election, does it?
Yeah, well, Gary Jufa, who works with the Pacific Media Centre, he is the current governor of Oro in Papua New Guinea, and you know, his name wasn't even included on the list of candidates, apparently.
Oh, good.
So I think it's too soon to call what will happen, but there is an expression that, you know, they want a change of government in Papua New Guinea. Whether or not they do get that change, it just remained the question.
Mm. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about today, Kendall?
Yes, so one of our colleagues, Brandon Olsby, he's a final journalism student at AUT. He gave us a bit of a scoop last week regarding the new head of state for Samoa, mm-hmm. Which was fantastic, you know, to get ahead of mainstream media. We are an independent news organisation and we do try to cover things as fairly and equitably as possible. So it was really good to get that scoop. And obviously today is the anniversary of the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior, and the Sunday Star Times run a front page spread regarding the French special agent who infiltrated Greenpeace. They had an exclusive interview with her in France. She's basically been hiding out in a local village ever since that incident, and they had an exclusive interview with her, and the editor of the Sunday Star Times, sort of, he said that you know, it was sullen and churlish that you know, their France's past apology, and the fact that they should, that all of those obviously they were welcomed as heroes back after that bombing, and that they were awarded medals, and the Sunday Star Times editorial has said that they should be stripped of those medals. Our own director, Professor David Roby, he also said he wrote a book about the Rainbow Warrior bombing, and the Rongelap humanitarian mission in Eyes of Fire, and he said that these revelations by the Sunday Star Times, that, you know, she is not apologetic for her actions, she stands by those actions, she said she was doing it for her country, so on and so forth, patriotism, and he said that it's again exposed the hypocrisy regarding the global war on terror, and you know, he said this was an attack on a peaceful environmental ship by a friendly nation, state terrorism, and it included the shocking murder of a friend and colleague, Fernando Pereira, whose family never received real justice, and he said it's such a callous act and that will never be forgiven or forgotten. And I think those are very profound words from someone who was there during the time when Greenpeace was trying to help people in the Pacific evacuate from French nuclear testing, and, you know, the UN have decided to ban nuclear weapons, which I think is something that we really, really need to celebrate, because at the end of the day, people in the Pacific, they're still victims, they're still dealing with the radioactive fallout, health issues.
Well, thank you so much again for coming in this week, Kendall. We'll chat to you again next week.
No problem, thank you.
That was the Southern Cross.